Live and local
from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
We are Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game, KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette.
It's time to step your game up.
Boy, you wouldn't know how to write your name if it wasn't set for like locker.
It's Rep Game with RP3, Raymond Parts the Third.
One of God's own prototypes. A high-powered mutant of some kind never even considered for mass production. Too weird to live, too rare to die.
Want to interact? Call in at 337-706-0111.
We have it.
RP3 is taking the mic and bringing you to the center of the sports world on Rep Game with RP3 on 103.7 The Game and 1037thegame.com.
He's got to keep living, man. L-I-V-I-N.
Solid. I'll tell you what I'm blathering about. I've got information, man.
The previous high in this building, 43 by Charles Bradley of Florida State.
Hogan tried to draw it. All of a sudden, 12.
Wayne Schintz is in his three ball games this year, 22, 18, and now 25.
See, that Dale's trying to get him to slow down.
Wow, what an assist that was.
Good morning, Acadiana. Raymond Parts III here, host of Rap Game with RP3, right here on 103.7 The Game, your home of the LSU Tigers, broadcasting live this morning from the 237 Roof Studios here in Upper Lafayette. You can give us a call on the ARCO Equipment Hotline at 337-706-0111. That sound you heard crackled a little bit, because it's about 30 years old, was of the one and only, the man formerly known as Chris Jackson, LSU superstar, now known as Mahab Abdul-Rauf. He was by far one of the top three, top five players I've seen play in my lifetime in college. It's not even close. Shaq is one of those other guys. Definitely one of the best players to ever represent the state of Louisiana. And for those that don't remember just how good he was when he was at LSU, he was a first team All-American as a freshman. And as a sophomore. And he was on the cover of Sports Illustrated representing LSU. He played his second year. If I remember right, it was Chris and then Stanley Roberts were part of the first recruiting. He was already there. They were not a very good team when he got there. He made them into an NCAA tournament team. The next year, they got Stanley Roberts and Shaquille O'Neal to come and join him, and they were a NCAA tournament team again. And then he left and went to the NBA, where he was a lottery pick, ended up breaking a ton of records, a slew of records in the NBA. And his story is interesting for numerous levels because, you know, this is someone, he came from poverty. He never knew his father. He didn't find out about his father, or at least that his father, I want to say, was a white man until like he was in his 20s. He doesn't get diagnosed with Tourette's until he's a junior in high school. So his entire youth, no dad around, poverty in rural, or right there in Gulfport, in Mississippi, in Gulfport, Mississippi, raised in poverty, has no dad around, has no idea that he has Tourette's. He has no idea. They don't diagnose him having Tourette's until he's a junior in high school. Imagine that. Imagine just walking through all the time. And he has talked about that in the years since then, instances of he just would brush his hair over and over and over again, so much so that he would break out into a sweat as if he had played four quarters of a basketball game, because he would just stare in the mirror and he'd keep doing things like that over and over again. And doctors didn't know what to do with him. They're just like, well, you have these tics, he'll pass. He overcame all of that. Gets to LSU and just absolutely tears it up. Only 6'1", 160 pounds. Just tore it up. First round pick, third overall selection by the Denver Nuggets, as I said. He was a two-time consensus first-team All-American as a freshman. Once again, he was a consensus freshman, All-American as a freshman. Not he was on the All-American freshman team. No. He was on the actual big boy team. That's how good he was. That's how dominant he was. He was the two-time SEC Player of the Year. An amazing. His third game of his career for LSU, he dropped 48 points. 48 in his third game as a true freshman. That was against Louisiana Tech. He then set the scoring record for a freshman when he dropped 53 against Florida. That was in 1989. He then, that same season, the 88-89 season, he turned around and dropped 55 against Ole Miss. This is as a freshman. When's the last time you remember a freshman in college basketball putting up those kind of numbers? As great as Zion Williamson is for Duke, and he's projected to be the number one overall pick, or any of the guys that have come out and played in college in the last 10 to 15 years, you remember a guy that could score at will like that? That was dropping 50-plus points multiple times during his freshman season? He set the NCAA record for most points by a freshman and points by per game by a freshman. His sophomore season with Shaq and Stanley Roberts in the mix, he averaged 27.8 per game. He was once again named SEC Player of the Year, first team All-American for a second year in a row. And then Abdul Wolf declared for the NBA draft. His professional career started off so great. He was NBA All-Rookie second team. Despite that, here's an interesting tidbit about him. Despite that, he never dunked in a game, he took part in the 1993 slam dunk contest. Never dunked in a game, but he took part in it anyway. He led the league in free throw percentage in 93-94 and then again in 95-96. He was the NBA Most Improved Player Award in 93. He dropped 51 points against the Utah Jazz. You know who was guarding him that game? John Stockton, Hall of Famer. And you're probably asking me, Ray, why are you going down memory lane? Why are you talking about a cat that hasn't played at LSU in 30 years, hasn't played in the league in more than 20 years? Well, he's popped up again for numerous reasons. One being he takes part in the Big Three, Ice Cube's basketball league, the three-on-three league, which is a ton of fun to watch, by the way. And he is, at 49 years old, still out there schooling the younger cats. Still out there shooting the ball with perfection. That's kind of brought him back into our consciousness again with his affiliation with the Big Three. Another reason why we're talking about him more these days is because of the situation with Colin Kaepernick. Because he was the first, not the first in the line, but he was the first in a similar way with Colin Kaepernick. He had his own national anthem controversy. where he refused to stand for the Star-Spangled Banner before games. He was suspended by the league. Cost him about $30,000 per game. And about 2 days later, he worked out a compromise with the league where he would stand during the playing of the national anthem but would close his eyes and look downward. He also became a Muslim as well. And it's always been a thorny issue with him when you talk to people about his legacy with LSU, his legacy here in the state of Louisiana, is also his legacy in the state of Mississippi. The anthem protests still irates people to this day. The fact that he is a Muslim makes people uncomfortable. Let's just call it what it is. But when you watch him play and you look up the old YouTube highlights, you see Steph Curry. He was Steph Curry before Steph Curry. For everyone that says Steph Curry has the best jump shot, the prettiest follow through, a thing of beauty, his shot and how he plays the game of basketball and how he shoots the basketball, he wasn't the first to do it. The man who played for LSU was the guy that did it first. And I bring him up again because our good friend of the station, 103.7 The Game, Jacques Doucette, was able to speak with him last night. There was an event in Baton Rouge. He appeared, he spoke, and Jacques had a couple of great, had on-camera interview with the man LSU fans always remember as Chris Jackson. Here's a portion of it.
It was unreal. Coach Carson is shaking me after the game, saying they want to talk to you outside. You just scored 53. I didn't even know it because you're just playing. And that was a room full of journalists. And I remember getting on the bus that night, man. I was crying because I'm saying to myself, this is too good to be true. Something's going to happen. Things like this don't happen to people like me because you dream it. But it's your first year, and you pull it, and it feels like I'm on the playground with guys I grew up playing with, doing the same moves I've been doing since elementary, thinking I'll have to change my game tremendously, but I didn't.
He also was asked, there's been talk of the last couple of years about retiring his jersey at LSU. Now, I'll get to the reason why that hasn't happened. There's actually a technical reason for that, but this is how he was asked what it would mean to him if LSU decided to retire his jersey.
Should your number be retired? I mean, I guess nobody can campaign for themselves, but do you hear that kind of stuff? And how would you feel if that happened?
I hear it all the time. I hear it a lot. Like, why? Why not? Why isn't it in there?
Would that mean a lot to you to go in there and see it hanging?
Well, I mean, of course. To see that people value your game to that extent and the contributions that you made, not just to the game but to the university, it's a beautiful thing if it happened. But if it doesn't happen, you know, life goes on. And I always say that, you know, things like that, that's not going to be something, if you're a religious person, that's not going to get me in paradise. I can't say, God, I average 30.2 points a game. My jersey's retired. Let me in. So in that case, it doesn't matter. But on the other end of it, you know, history, it's important.
Shaq, a few years back, I want to say in 2016, actually sent a letter to the LSU Basketball Jersey Retirement Nomination Committee, which is an actual thing, believe it or not, saying that one of the greatest basketball talents I've ever been around and one of the greatest in college basketball history, you know his record at LSU, O'Neal wrote, you saw him bring LSU fans out of their seats. When I heard you might consider retiring his jersey, I jumped at the chance to offer my input as to what Chris Jackson meant to the LSU basketball team. That's from Shaq. Shaq has a statue outside of the PMAC, by the way. We'll get to that, too. There's an interesting thing there. Him and Bob Pettit have statues outside of the PMAC. There's only
Shaq, the Shaq statue, though, still missing the plaques around the base. Kind of weird. Bob Pettit, when you walk around his statue, it has a lot of plaques. His stats and his like bio and all that. The base, I don't know if that they're still waiting on Shaq to finalize what he wants maybe on there or whatnot, but that's just something I noticed because the statues are not
it's
far
in the mail.
From
it.
Right.
It's in the mail.
And the statues are very close to each other. They look a little different.
There's only six retired jerseys that hang from the rafters. It's Shaq, it's Pistol Pete Maravich, Rudy Macklin, Bob Pettit, and on the women's side, Simone Augustus, and I want to say Sylvia Fowles. Their jerseys are retired. But Chris Jackson's 35 is not. Now, this has been talked about honoring him and having that done and having his jersey retired. Apparently, there's a rule with LSU, though. And I don't know if you knew this, Cody. That to have your jersey retired, Kevin Mawai actually tweeted this out because there started to be an exchange because obviously he was in town and Jacques talked to him and people were going back and forth about it because he's such a memorable player. For a whole generation, he was the best basketball pure shooter we ever saw here in the state. If you grew up in Baton Rouge or New Orleans like I did during that time, I went into my driveway trying to practice to become Chris Jackson. Now, I was woefully fell short. That man, at almost 50 years old, you can see a YouTube video, you can go check it out, where he practices shooting 120 shots, three-point shots, and he just goes around. You know how many he made in that video? 116. Okay. That's the type of dedication, and that's the type of guy, just the player he was. But this is something that was, you know, Jacques Doucette, you know, talked about it like he was his favorite player. It's his favorite LSU player of all time. And via the LSU website, all the criteria are on the LSU website, and this was from Matt Moscona, also friend of 103.7 The Game. It includes Hall of Fame, the LSU Hall of Fame, jersey retirement, etc., is that you have to be a graduate, Cody. You have to be a graduate. That's why Shaq's statue, Shaq came back to school, right? That's why there's not a statue of Pistol Pete. The PMAC, you're like, well, the PMAC is the Pete Maravich Assembly Center. You're correct. State lawmakers named that facility. That was the state that stepped in and named that the house that Pete built. That's why there's not a statue of Pistol Pete. Now, oddly, his jersey's retired. So that's, I have questions because there is that rule that if you want the floor named after you or if you want your jersey retired or want to be inducted into the Sports Hall of Fame, you have to be a graduate of LSU. Bob Pettit, Shaq are both grads. That's also why they have the statues.
I'm going to volley back your direction with same reasoning, the PMAC, Alec Box Stadium. Neither technically graduated from LSU, but wore an issue, at least for Alec Box, would be why he is not a graduate of
correct.
LSU. I don't know if Pistol Pete is necessarily in that sense, but I'm just trying to point out there are ways to be honored of getting around that, you know. I don't know, Pistol Pete left early for the NBA or didn't graduate and went professional, but whatever.
So we're going to throw it up on the 103.7 The Game Twitter account. Real quick, here in the break, it'll be up there. Do you think LSU should change its rules and retire number 35? We'll throw that up there. Want to get your reaction, give us a call on the ARCO Equipment Hotline today as well, 337-706-0111. When we come back, we'll be talking about LSU hoops distraction. Oh, yeah. There was some negative news that came out yesterday. We talked about the glory days to start things off. We got to talk about a little bit of bad news for the LSU men's basketball team that came out yesterday. Right here on Rap Game with RP3 on 103.7 The Game, your home of the LSU Tigers.
I just saw it. I've not heard anything or hadn't heard anything until I just saw it before I walked in here. I really haven't been following it all that closely. I've been focused on our team. So today was, I learned about it, like I said, just before I walked in here. Look, we've got to focus on playing A&M, and that's, I mean, my focus on our team and our guys, staying locked in with them and helping them continue to win.
That was LSU men's basketball coach Will Wade talking to reporters yesterday during his weekly press conference about the report that came out courtesy of Pat Forty, Pete Thamel, and Dan Wetzel of Yahoo Sports. Sources have said that Arizona head basketball coach Sean Miller, as well as Wade, have been notified that they will be subpoenaed in federal hoops corruption trial. According to Yahoo, the preliminary notifications have been sent out to both coaches that they will be suspended for the April 22nd federal basketball corruption trial. By the way, that is past the Final Four. So the Final Four will already be in the books, by the way, in case you were curious. These notifications are essentially a courtesy to avoid a public spectacle. It creates the potential of two high-profile head coaches testifying in federal court about the detail of the recruiting underworld or the underbelly. You know, this popped up last year during SEC Media Days because both coaches have long been known to be on federal wiretaps talking to Christian Dawkins. This is according to Yahoo. Dawkins is a former low-level agent runner who was found guilty of multiple felony fraud charges in the first corruption trial back in October. That was right around the same time as SEC Media Days. During that time, they tried one of the attorneys for one of the former Adidas executives, which are also part of this corruption trial, attempted to play this wiretap, an alleged conversation between Will Wade and Dawkins concerning a player from Florida who ended up signing with Florida State this last year. It was ruled that it could not be read in that it could not be listened to in court, but the attorney was able to read it aloud. So this is part of that. But what terrible timing for this to happen for the LSU men's basketball team, the terrific season that they're having. They're in their driver's seat of the SEC regular season championship now with four games to go, and now they're going to have this hanging over their head. Terrible timing. We'll talk more about this. We'll dive deeper with our friend Sheldon Mickles from the Baton Rouge Advocate, who covers the LSU men's basketball team, here on Rap Game with RP3, right here on 103.7 The Game.
Smart working against Bone. Out to Days. Pass to Mays. Ball fake. Drive the baseline. Kick it out. Pass Days. Open for three. Rainmaker. Good! Whistle and a foul. Admiral Schofield trying to close out. Picks up the personal foul, and that cuts the lead 10-7.
That was the voice of the LSU Tigers, the one and only Chris Blair on the call from Saturday's dramatic 82-80 victory for the LSU men's basketball team over then-ranked number 5, Tennessee. The Tigers return to the hardwood tonight, and you can listen to it live right here on 103.7 The Game, your home for the LSU Tigers. Tiger Ag Radio is going to be on from 6:30 to 7:30 tonight. Then pregame for tonight's game against Texas A&M. We'll take over at 7:30 and then tip right at 8 o'clock. So you just keep it live and local right here on 103.7 The Game. This is the Rap Game with RP3. I'm your host, Raymond Parks III, here on 103.7 The Game. And we're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios. We're going to head out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline and welcome on our friend. He covers the LSU men's basketball team for the Baton Rouge Advocate, someone and only Sheldon Mickles. Sheldon, how are you this morning, brother?
Very good, Raymond. How you doing?
I'm doing well, man. So before we get down to talking about the greatness that occurred Saturday inside the PMAC and inside a sold-out PMAC, that great victory, and then have you preview tonight's game, the news broke yesterday. Yahoo Sports broke the news and about that Will Wade or his representation has been notified that he will be subpoenaed to testify in a basketball corruption trial in the end of April. This is connected to the case with Dawkins, the wannabe agent who tried to negotiate the services of the allegedly tried to negotiate the services of a star player out of Florida who ended up signing with Florida State. Also involves Adidas. There's a lot of moving parts. What was your reaction when you heard the news yesterday, shortly before the Will Wade press conference, that he was going to be subpoenaed?
Well, it wasn't a total shock because back in October when the first trial was going on, you know, the word came out from, I think Yahoo was covering it, and also SI.com. Word came out of New York that, you know, all of a sudden Will Wade's name came up in a taped conversation. And there was a lot of speculation after that trial or after that was tried to get put into evidence. It never got put into evidence. The judge wouldn't allow it.
Right.
They would try some other way, that the defense attorneys would try another way, and here's the other way they're trying now. I think the first one was a corruption trial. I think this one is going to be a criminal trial, if I'm correct. But, it wasn't a big surprise because, like I said, those two outlets kind of painted a picture that, you know, they were there talking to the defense attorneys and everything. They kind of painted a picture that something else was going to come down the pike here.
Sheldon, you've been doing this for quite a long time, brother, not to give your age away, but you've seen it all, covering LSU athletics. How much does this take away, or does it take away at all of what they've been able to accomplish this season? It popped up at SEC Media Days. It was addressed about it then. It was kind of put in the rearview mirror. They've had this terrific season. Now here it is again with four games to go in the regular season, and they can win their first regular season championship since 2009. And now all of a sudden Will Wade's having to kind of answer or not answer questions in his weekly press conference about this trial.
Yeah, somebody asked him about the timing yesterday, and he just said we're focused on Texas A&M. And he's a pretty focused, obviously, person, and I think he's not going to probably, you know, fret a lot about it right now. Maybe, you know, in late March, you know, if they don't make the Final Four, if they get eliminated, say, in the Sweet 16 or somewhere, then I think he's going to really look at it, although he'll be getting on the recruiting. But, you know, I think he's probably letting somebody take care of this for him for now. You know, obviously he's got a lawyer. Somebody is going to be taking care of this for now, and I don't think he's going to think about it 1 minute, to tell you the truth. Knowing him, he's really focused on trying to, you know, make this a special season. And what happens on April 22nd or whenever it is, you know, the trial and whatever he's subpoenaed to go, I think he's going to deal with that later. But right now, I don't think this is going to be a distraction at all to him now. If it's really, you know, if it's worse than what I think it is, you know, he may have it in the back of his mind, but I don't think it's going to let him, he's going to let it affect his preparation for any game.
And to follow up on that, Sheldon, do you think it's going to serve as a distraction for the kids on the team or no?
No, I don't think he'll let it. I don't think he'll let them. You know, he might address it. You know, he may have already addressed it yesterday, and like probably he told him, hey, you know, don't worry about it. You know, I'll deal with this later, like I just said. And I think the players are a bunch of strong-willed, you know, players, and you know, they're worried about winning games right now, not what's going to happen in April. The same way I just said about Will Wade, but. These guys, they see it. It's not like they're 5-20 right now, you know, and waiting for the end of the season. I mean, they got some good goals out there they could reach. I'm sure, you know, obviously the regular season championship is one, tournament, SEC tournament is another one. Then you go on to the next one, probably get, let's get to the Sweet 16. So, you know, they got a lot of goals. I mean, they have the kind of team when you're sitting here 22-5, you got a lot of goals you can pick off, you know, one at a time you're trying to do. So, the first one comes tonight. They could get a double bye if they win tonight. So double bye in the SEC tournament. So the first goal comes tonight if they can, and if not, they'll try to get it Saturday at Alabama.
We're on with Sheldon Mickles of the Baton Rouge Advocate. He covers LSU men's basketball team. Sheldon, let's talk. Let's go back to Saturday. Sold out. PMAC, it was electric in there. It was one of the best crowds I've seen as a member of the media. And you were there as well. Look, Tremont Waters can't go. It gets announced, what, about 45 to 55 minutes prior to the start of the game that he's not going to be a go. It gets that news gets released. So their leading scorer, scratch, can't go. And then Naz Reid, their second leading scorer, picks up his first foul 48 seconds into the game and then has to sit the final 16 minutes of the first half and is held to 0 points in regulation. If I were to tell you that on Friday of last week, what would you have told me the outcome of the game would have been on Saturday?
Oh, I would have thought they would have lost by 10 to 12 points maybe. You know, the crowd might have helped them a little bit. They might have been juiced a little bit. You know, just playing number five Tennessee, even without, you know, Tremont and Nas, but you put that in front of them, not in front of them, but if you put that in front of me and tell me that's going to happen, I think they would have lost by 12 because – I just think Tennessee at some point would have worn down, would have, you know, just found a way to run off, you know, 12, 14 points in a row because they're just too good. I mean, if they would have been playing, you know, not picking on anybody, I would call them Podunk U, you know, in a non-conference game, you go, hey, they're gonna get by anyway. They're going to win by 10 or, you know, 8. But if you put that in front of me with a number 5 Tennessee team in town, it's a recipe for probably for disaster. I mean, I think 10 to 12. You know, last year they went to almost a similar situation. They went to Tennessee. And, you know, Wade Sims was suspended for the game. Brandon Rashaw was suspended for the game. I think they had only 7 players available. And they hung with Tennessee for, you know, 31 minutes until the last 9 minutes. And then Tennessee just blew it open. But they seem to have a way to have a will no pun intended, to get the job done no matter what the odds are. And I think that all goes back to what I was saying about what kind of special season they're having. And I think they just go about, it's like one of the, you know, I think Devontae Smart said, coach, it's always to do our job. And, I mean, it's easy to say, you know, for a coach, but he's got to say it. But, you know, it all goes back to what the mentality is instilled in this team.
You mentioned Javonte Smart. He had a career game on Saturday, Sheldon. He just took over the game, especially in the second half where he started attacking the basket. Tennessee had no answer for that. And he ends up making big shot after big shot, and then he nails the free throws there to seal the win in overtime. Yeah, we've talked about Javonte a lot during the course of the season. We know what his talent is. Anyone that watched even 5 minutes of him playing at Scotlandville knows that this kid is an immense talent. There's a reason why other programs like Kentucky were trying to recruit him. But it's always been, you know, he always seems to be too amped up or too excited, and he doesn't let the game come to him, so to speak. And I've always said, as soon as that happens, he's going to be special. And it sure did look like that happened on Saturday, especially in the second half and in overtime. Your thoughts on Javonte?
Yeah, he's struggled this year, you know, shooting the 3-point shot, especially, and I think I checked on it before the midweek game last week, against Florida. I think I checked, and he had, out of 25 games to that point, or 24 games, he had shot over 50% from the field exactly 4 or 5 times. I can't remember if it was 4 or 5, but you know, a lot of times it's, you know, 4 out of 9, so that's under 50. But he just hasn't shot the ball well on a consistent basis. But when, look, to your point, in the second half, he started gathering the basket. I don't know how many layups he had, but he just went by people and just got to the glass and laid it in. Will Wade told us in preseason, he said this guy was really, really attacking the rim, attacking the basket, and he was getting to the foul line. If he wasn't making a shot, making a layup or a dunk, he was getting to the foul line because people were trying to contain this guy who's like a 6'4", you know, pretty sturdily built 6'4" kid. So, you know, they saw it a lot in the preseason. So maybe, you know, they just had to reaffirm to him, you know, hey, you got to get to the basket. I mean, that's what Tremont does. He gets to the basket and draws the defense to him, kicks it out. That's the kind of thing Tremont has become known for. And, you know, I think you could tell there was a difference in the team. You know, nothing against the guys that were out there, but, you know, you could tell there was a little bit of like a step off, a step slower And like I said, nothing against these guys because they wound up, you know, playing the game really well. But it's almost like when you think about when you watch a Saints game without Drew Brees, like you did in this regular season finale, it's kind of different. And that's what it was to me the other night. It was kind of different without Kamon out there. So it's the kind of thing where you might have to get used to it because, you know, I definitely think Kamon's gonna put his name out there in the draft again, and I would think he's gonna give it really serious thought to go on this time.
Sheldon, let's talk about Tremont. You know, he was not able to go on Saturday. We find out in the presser afterwards, Coach Will Wade says that they tried to give him an IV, which was on Friday. And he even hinted that possibly Waters was already dealing with the sickness on Wednesday in the game against Florida, but the coaching staff wasn't aware of it until probably the next day. He talked to that. He expects him to go. A&M is a scrappy team. I know that. They've won four of their last five. But they're four games under 500. Do we see Waters tonight? And if so, do you think it's going to be in a limited capacity?
Well, Will Wade said yesterday Tremont is progressing. He was better Sunday. He was even better yesterday. Now, this is the full practice, so we don't know, you know, what happened in practice. But you know, if he had some kind of virus, you know, I would think, and that's the word Dick Vitale used on the game because I watched it on DVR the next morning. He said he called it a virus, so we didn't get that word. We just said he was ill, undisclosed illness. But you know, if he had a virus, if that is the case, you know, I would think he's going to be back tonight, and I would expect Javante to start again though. You know, especially if if they want to make sure that Tremont is okay, they want him for 2 weeks from now, 3 weeks from now. So,
right.
I'm sure they're going to be cautious with him, and if they have to, they might have to, you know, go with Javante to start. But you know, knowing the competitor Tremont is, he'll probably, if he's given the clearance to go, he's going to want to start. But I just think maybe they might, you know, roll the dice with, and it's not really a roll of the dice, but I just think it might go with Javante again and then see how it goes and, you know, maybe pop, you know, Tremont in there in the first 4 minutes of the game, first official timeout, something like that. So we'll see. And I just think that, Javante gave him a bit of juice the other day, and, you know, maybe they might want to try to carry that over, you know, to today. Not that Tremonte doesn't give him any juice because, like I told you before, it's a different game when he's out there. And even Skylar May said that we're a much better team when Tremont is out there. So,
right.
You know, when the players are talking like that after the game, with Javante sitting right next to him, it's not a knock on Javante at all. It just tells you how much they like and respect Tremont's abilities.
Sheldon, tell me a little bit about this matchup. I know Will Wade is not going to be taking this team lightly, this Aggies team. They have won four of their last five. They're battling towards the end of the season here. LSU's already beat them once this season. Any challenges A&M poses to the Tigers tonight?
Well, the one big one that stands out is that Wendell Mitchell, a guard who – when LSU played in College Station in late January, he was coming off I want to say he had 24 points. I don't remember who the opponent was, but the game before, he had 24 points. And, LSU held him down. I want to say he got five, maybe six, 7 points. But now he's playing the point guard position. They demoted T.J. Starks. They got him coming off the bench now, and he was starting at the point. But now Wendell Mitchell is starting at the point, and Will Wade said he's playing absolutely a lot better. You look at the four games they won, though. I mean, it was against Missouri. It was against Arkansas. It was against the bottom feeders, a lot of the bottom feeders, and they beat South Carolina. They lost to South Carolina, excuse me, in between. They won two, lost to South Carolina, then won two. But the teams they beat, they probably, should have beat, at least should have had a 50-50 chance to beat. But, I'll tell you what Will Wade said about him. Once he said, here's something I didn't even look at until I picked up the stats after. Texas A&M hosted Missouri and lost. And he went to Missouri and won. And they lost to Arkansas at home in the first game of the SEC schedule, then went to Fayetteville and won. So he looks at that and he goes, look, they lost on their home court twice. They lost to us on the home court twice. Now they got to play us in Baton Rouge. We better be ready. That's the kind of things he looks for. I mean, he knows that they played better on the road in those games where they had the home and home. Like I said, losing to Missouri and Arkansas at home and then beating both of them on the road. So he's probably got his, got his team aware of that, hey, for some reason they're playing better on the road this year. So that's the kind of little thing he looks for, and maybe a lot of people wouldn't have noticed. It was the same thing with Arkansas. LSU went up to Arkansas, beat them, and Arkansas came here, beat LSU. So I think those are the kind of things he looks for and make sure his team is aware of. But no, he's not going to take this team the right way at all. They went either a tie game or LSU was trailing by one at halftime up in College Station. So LSU kind of put on a nice surge. Tremont was going crazy that night. They had 36 points, and I think they'd like to have him back to take another shot at A&M. He killed him twice last year, so hey, you need to have him back again. I'm sure that's what he's thinking.
Sheldon, brother, appreciate you making some time for us. As always, I'll see you out there tonight. And stay safe out there, brother. I'll talk to you later.
All right, man. Take it easy. Have a good day.
Baton Rouge Advocate, LSU men's basketball beat reporter, columnist, notebook writer extraordinaire, Sheldon Mickles, joining us here on the Rap Game with RP3. When we come back, we will wrap up the first hour talking some Pelicans. Sorry to depress you, but we have to do it. Here on 103.7 The Game. You're welcome back to Rap Game with RP3. I'm your host, Raymond Parts III, right here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette. So, ladies and gentlemen, have you ever wanted to go onto a cruise? I have. Never been able to do it.
There's a Chris Jericho cruise. There's a Gronk cruise. A lot of good cruises.
I feel like the Gronk cruise should come with shots. And I'm not talking about the kind that come in shot glasses.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Well, did you ever want to go on a cruise with the old ball coach, Steve Spurrier?
No
yes.
Way.
Yes. This is why the Rap Game is a strong supporter of the Alliance.
Sign me up.
You can go on a cruise with the Orlando Apollos head coach, Steve Spurrier, and his entire staff from July 12th to the 15th. This is what they say. Mark your calendar for July 12th to the 15th, 2019, for what is certain to be the most fun football event of the year, the inaugural Steve Spurrier Cruise. Picture yourself on Royal Caribbean's beautiful Miss Mariner of the Seas, along with fellow coach Steve Spurrier fans and his entire coaching staff. Have fun and in-depth discussions about the Alliance of American Football, the Apollos, the players, and more. Sign me up. Where can I go on the cruise ship with Steve Spurrier? That is awesome, and that's why I love this league. We'll talk to Les East after the break. Break down some New Orleans Pelicans for us right here on Rap Game with RP3 on 103.7 The Game.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette, we are Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game, KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time to step your game up.
Boy, you wouldn't know how to write your name if it wasn't Step Like Locker.
It's Rap Game with RP3, Raymond Parts III.
One of God's own prototypes. High-powered mutant of some kind never even considered for mass production. Too weird to live, too rare to die.
Want to interact? Call in at 337-706-0111.
We have it? Yeah, we have it.
RP3 is taking the mic and bringing you to the center of the sports world on Rap Game with RP3 on 103.7 The Game and 1037thegame.com.
You just got to keep living, man. L-I-V-I-N.
I'll tell you what I'm blathering about. I've got information, man.
Sixers 111, Pelicans 110. Foul line right. Jonathan Simmons puts the right-hand free throw up. Short. They get the rebound. Randle with it. And now on the move, the Pelicans. They go to Etuan Moore. It's up. It's blocked by Butler. And it's picked out of there by Tobias Harris. And the Sixers, Jimmy Butler, preserves a win in the Big Easy. Nice job. The Sixers hold on to a one-point lead.
That was obviously a very enthusiastic play-by-play man for the 76ers. Philadelphia 76ers radio. Welcome back to the second.
It's been a long time for that guy, for him to be excited. If he's been a long-tenured radio broadcaster for the Sixers, it's been a while since he's been able to be happy about things. So cut him a little slack.
He's still way too enthusiastic about beating the 12th ranked team in the West.
By a punt.
By punt. Well, we'll have time to troll Philadelphia broadcasters.
You promise?
Yes. We'll wait time for that. The second hour of Rap Game with RP3. I'm your host, Raymond Parse III, here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios. And we're going to head out to the Arco Equipment Hotline to talk to our good friend from Crescent City Sports, the one and only Les East, who was inside the Big Blender last night watching that game between the 76ers and the Pels that the Pels were unfortunately on the losing end of. Les, welcome back to the show, brother. How are you this morning?
I'm doing well, Raymond. How are you?
I'm doing well, and look, man, I'm going to get right to it. The most important thing that came out of last night's game is what I believe that you have stumbled upon, an actual conspiracy. You tweeted out last night, Les East, respected journalist, New Orleans-based. Come to think of it, I don't know if the King Cake Baby and AD have been in the room at the same time since the trade demand. Les, do you believe that AD is actually also the King Cake Baby? Go.
Well, I don't know. That I think I put a question mark, or I left it uncertain in the tweet. That was a response to a Jeff Duncan tweet, I believe, who had observed that we had not seen King Cake Baby in the middle of Mardi Gras season. He apparently was in the building and poised to make his rounds, but had never actually entered the seating bowl area as he normally does. And certainly AD has a lot more free time on his hands than he used to have, only playing about 20 minutes a game. So I don't recall seeing them inside the building at the same time. So I don't know. Maybe the Pelicans, since they're not getting 38 minutes of on-court time out of Davis like they used to, they're only getting about 20. Maybe they're finding another way to put in the work those other 18 minutes so he earns his lucrative salary before he bolts for some other place.
Les, I just imagine when I saw that tweet, I saw Duncan tweet out first, and then you and Ron Higgins also kind of chimed in on the thread. And the first thing that came to my mind, brother, was Anthony Davis, his feelings have been hurt, how this has all gone down and how he's been booed all the time. And that I just see him running to change into the King Cake Baby outfit so he can have people take photos with him and say nice things to him. But then I realized how disappointing and sad that would make him because people kind of hate the King Cake Baby. So that's a no-win situation for Anthony Davis. That's where my mind went when I saw your tweet last night. That's what you inspired, my friend.
Well, I guess I'm glad I did because the less time you spend thinking about this team right now, you're probably better off. As creepy as King Cake Baby is and as conflicted as Pelicans fans are with him because of his creepiness and yet sort of bizarre ability to mesmerize people, he's probably more popular than Anthony Davis right now, who got more boos than cheers during the introductions last night, but it's feeling more and more apathetic as we go along where, fans just, they just want this to be over with.
Yeah, and it's just to the point of exhaustion, right? I mean, it's dominated the conversation around the team. It's dominated everything. It's frustrated Alvin Gentry. It's frustrated the front office. It's got a wear and tear on those guys. I know the guys are competitors down there that are playing for the Pels that are getting all these minutes. But it has to wear and tear on them. And I personally don't think that the players hate AD. I just think they hate the situation, right? I think they on some level can respect him wanting to do something better for himself. And I think on some level they respect that as a fellow competitor. But I think it's to the point now where they're just numb and they're just exhausted by the whole process. I just feel like them, Alvin Gentry, the front office, Gail Benson, and the fan base, and hell, the King Cake baby, they just all want the season to end. Like, if the season ended this weekend, they all would be happy.
Yeah, well, I think you're right. I don't think it would bother anybody if the season ended. And, you know, I think it is important to mention what you brought up, and that is teammates like Anthony Davis, they respect him. They understand how good a player he is, how hard he's worked for a long period of time to get to where he is, and they respect his desire to go somewhere else that he thinks will allow him to make more of his career than he has been able to make of it in New Orleans. However, there is an obvious difference between the energy level and the efficiency of play for this team when he is on the court and when he is not on the court, and it's much better when he's not on the court. It sounds crazy to say, but I wrote this the night of the Lakers game on Saturday at CrescentCitySports.com. Right now, under these circumstances, the Pelicans are a better team without Anthony Davis than they are with him, because the rest of the team plays harder, plays together more when he's not one of the five guys on the court. And last night was a perfect example of that. If they had pulled him from the game a minute earlier, they might have won the game, because they were down 15 when he left. They outscored the Sixers by 14 the rest of the way. If they'd gotten him out of the way sooner, that comeback might have been a little bit bigger, and they might have won the game, because they were immediately became a better team when he went out for the remainder of the game.
We're talking to Les Ease of Crescent City Sports. He covers New Orleans Pelicans and the New Orleans Saints. Let's talk a little bit about the game. Look, the 76ers are a very good team. They're one of the best teams in the Eastern Conference. A lot of people have projected them as being one of the, you know, possibly one of the three teams to come out of the East to represent the Eastern Conference in the NBA Finals. Others obviously being Boston, Toronto, and Milwaukee is in that mix. But the Sixers are in that mix. To be able to hang with them, and the 76ers needed a good stop by Tobias Harris, who they traded for from the Clippers, and Jimmy Butler, another one of their stars. What did that show you from the effort? We've talked about this through the whole situation, even before the trade demand, Les, was how this team was playing hard and they give forth effort. And I'll give Alvin Gentry that much credit. These other guys, these guys that are maybe G League guys, are just playing for a contract, maybe not necessarily with the Pels, but someone else. They play hard for Gentry, don't they? And they at least give forth effort. They may not execute, but they're giving forth effort.
They do play hard, and that can cover up a lot of shortcomings. And had the team with all of its best players on the floor, which hasn't happened a lot this year because of injuries, but had better players consistently played with the kind of effort that the players farther down the roster have played, that they would have a better record than the poor one that they currently have. They played hard, especially when Davis wasn't in last night. They played well. Now, the Sixers didn't have Joel Embiid, their all-star center, who's resting a knee, and he had some tendonitis. So they weren't at full strength, but they were still a very good team. I think picking up Tobias Harris was an outstanding move right at the trade deadline. I think they have as good a chance as anybody to win the East. Toronto, we'll see if they're just as fluky as they used to be with the coaching change in the postseason this year. I'm not sure the Bucks are ready to go to the finals yet. The Celtics are struggling a bit right now. So, you know, I think if the Sixers get healthy here down the stretch, and that the Marjanovic, the backup center, hurt his knee last night. It did not look good at all when he left, so that could be another issue they're facing down the stretch. But they're as good as the Eastern Conference has to offer right now. And other than Golden State, I'm not sure the West is that much better than the East compared to what it used to be. So the Sixers are an elite team. and the Pelicans had a chance to beat them in the final seconds, so they deserve credit. Alvin Gentry definitely deserves credit for getting this team, for the most part, to play hard during the circus that's been imposed on him by Davis, Davis's agent, the NBA, and the Pelicans front office. He's getting it from every direction, and he's the guy who has to deal with it. And I think he and the rest of the players have handled it pretty well under the circumstances. Last night was a good performance. They may play better on this road trip just because getting out of New Orleans will get them away from a lot of this negativity. I don't know. We'll see. But so far, the effort that they've given under the circumstances, I think, is something deserving of credit.
Les, a lot of these guys are playing for deals. But I want to talk about some of the lesser guys. Julius Randle has a player option. There's been talk that he not only wants to pick up that option, but that he wants to sign a long-term deal. So his free agency is going to be on the horizon. Elfrid Payton, when healthy, he plays well. He had 10 points and 14 assists last night, the former Raging Cajun star that they signed in the offseason. Joel Okafor, he's played very well, filling in for Anthony Davis. The team has an option on him. You know, look, Okafor's 23. Payton's 25. Randall's only 24. You also have a guy like Cheick Diallo. He's a restricted free agent. He's only 22. I know everyone kind of mocks the roster, but these are young players that can contribute if there's, you know, good talent around them. What's the likelihood that we see maybe two or even three of these guys on next year's roster?
Well, I think that would be helpful for the Pelicans because they're going to need to fill in a lot of pieces around whatever they get for Davis. I think draft picks are going to be a big part of whatever trade they make, so how much immediate help they're going to get, no one knows. They should get some, but they're going to need some complementary pieces. All of those guys are young, as you pointed out. I think keeping Elfrid Payton would be significant. If you had told me before the season that he would play as well as he has played, I would have said that was a best-case scenario for the Pelicans because we weren't quite sure what they were getting. His career had gotten off to kind of a slow start. Unfortunately, he's been hurt for most of the year. But I think he's blossomed into the kind of player they were hoping for when he has been healthy. That would be key. Randle, I don't know what's going to happen. I would expect him certainly to opt out and see what the market holds for him. I think there will be a lot of interest for him. So whether or not they're able to bring him back, I don't know. He's a very good, young, ascending player. It would be helpful if they're able to keep him, but I think there's going to be a lot of competition to do so. So I don't know. We don't know who the general manager is going to be. We don't know who the head coach is going to be. We don't know what they're going to get for Davis. So we don't know how attractive this situation is going to be for guys who go on the market. I think Diallo is a guy who's known no other place in the NBA. I think he has a comfort level. He's been able to develop slowly but surely here. So I think there's a good chance he might want to stick around. But you know, this whole thing is just filled with uncertainty. And until they get a GM and a coach in place and the smoke clears from this forgettable season, it's really hard to project what these guys are going to want to do. I don't think any of them could predict where they're going to wind up, but I do think they're going to want to explore their options.
We're on with Les East of Crescent City Sports. Let's talk a little bit more about that, Les. You bring up a good point. You know, there's so much uncertainty. I say that the first shoe to drop is getting the GM and the director of basketball operations in place ASAP, because then it's free agency, then the draft, right? Free agency opens first, just like the NFL, then the draft?
Well, you know, free agency starts right after the draft. You know,
Okay.
I believe there's a trade window, but free agency usually starts around July 1, and
okay.
The draft is at the end of June. So they're kind of back-to-back. The NFL, I think, is actually kind of going to the NBA model where there's a brief window where you can negotiate, but you can't actually sign people somewhere in the first few days of July. But another significant date on there is going to be the lottery, which I believe will be in May, because whoever wins the lottery, especially if it's the New York Knicks, that's going to make somebody else a player potentially in trade talks for Davis. So until we know what teams have to offer and Pelicans are able to start talking to them and we see how the draft shakes out, not to mention who the Pelicans hire, everything else is just guessing, and we really don't know nearly as much as we're going to know come late June and early July.
Les, we'll wrap it up with this. Are there any early candidates to – I know we've talked a little bit about Danny Ferry. You know, he's serving as the interim role. A name that was thrown out there, Louisiana's own, a legend, a guy that's in the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame, a guy that's won an NBA World Championship as a front office, was Joe Dumars. But that's already been squashed, right? That he has no interest and they have no interest in him. So if it's not someone like that, and is there anybody else out there that maybe the Pels are looking at, or maybe an up-and-coming front office guy that – could be on a short list that the Pels would want to go speak to help come in and take over operations?
Yeah, I think they're in the process of gathering those names. I hired an outside search firm to help with that. Probably another name that's going to come up at some point is Avery Johnson, the head coach at the University of Alabama, who's a New Orleans native, played at Southern University. I believe he's also in Louisiana.
Sports Hall of Fame.
Sports Hall of Fame.
Yes, sir.
And, you know, he's a guy who could be coach, GM, or both. I don't think they're likely to go in that direction, but I do think his name will come up. I think they're more likely to go in the direction of a young and up-and-coming. There's a guy, and his name escapes me at the moment, but there is an assistant in Boston who's kind of learned at Danny Ainge's side, who I think that type of person – who's a number two guy at a first-class organization, whether it be Boston or San Antonio or some other successful organization. I think that's the more likely direction that they're going to go. You know, Danny Ferry possibly could be in the mix. You know, he's been here for a couple of years. If he was the guy who should be leading this franchise, you would think that they would not be in the disarray they're in now, and they wouldn't have to hire an outside search firm to find somebody. So I'd be surprised if he got the job on a permanent basis. I think it's more likely to be a top lieutenant at a place such as Boston. But we don't know. We're still early in the process, and I think that the Pelicans are still gathering names at this point.
Well, Les, I appreciate you, brother. Now, we'll wrap it up with this. We'll get you out of here with this one, man. What could the Pelicans get on draft night if they traded the King Cake Baby? What could they get in return? Give it to me.
If I were them, I wouldn't settle for anything less than a lottery pick.
Yes.
So we'll see how the ping pong balls shake out and who's got what to offer. But you know, the King Cake Babies don't come along every day, so you can't. You can't just let him go. You got to let the market set the price.
Les, brother, I appreciate you playing along, man. I appreciate you coming on, as always, my friend. Keep killing it down there for Crescent City Sports, and we'll talk to you soon, my friend.
Thanks, Raymond.
Les East, Crescent City Sports, having a little fun with us here on the Rap Game with RP3. Well, more Rap Game coming up right here on 103.7 The Game after this break. Acadiana, we need your input on something here on the Rap Game with RP3. I'm your host, Raymond Parson III. Cody Schutz is on the ones and twos,
playing you these smooth tracks.
Ah, the smooth jazz. Speaking of jazz, we're going to talk more Pels for you real quick.
That was a bit of a reach. I'll allow it. I'll allow it. That was a bit of a reach.
You see, last week I got away with stuff because Joey was just, you know, he's so happy. He's just behind the scenes.
I'll allow it, but that's a close one.
But the boss man's back in town to keep me in line. So, Acadiana, we need to hear from you. I know we put a burden on you this morning here on the Rap Game, making you vote not on one but two Twitter poll questions. I get it. We need you to know, A, should LSU change its policy and retire Chris Jackson's former number 35 jersey? Hang it in the rafters. That's the first question. The second question is, would you go on a cruise with Steve Spurrier and the Orlando Apollos coaching staff? Yes to yes for me on both. And the third question is, the King Cake Baby and Anthony Davis now the same person since the trade request? We're going to throw that up there on the Twitter, in the Twitterverse on the 103.7 The Game Twitter account. We need you to vote. We need your input. We need your insight. Because we've efforted trying to get the King Cake Baby on the line, and we were unable to. So we're worried. We think
first
that this
time
may
he
be,
hasn't answered. I don't know.
First time he's not answered, and we think this may be true now. Anthony Davis possibly has done something with the real King Cake Baby. It's Mardi Gras season, damn it. That will not stand.
Allegedly.
Allegedly. When we come back here on The Rap Game with RP3, we're going to talk some Alliance football. We willed it into existence, me and Cody Schutz. Meddy B, named the starter. We're going to talk more about it here after the break on 103.7 The Game.
Coming out for the Express at quarterback is Zach Mettenberger, the former LSU star, the former Tennessee Titans quarterback. He is in the game, his first appearance for the Express. Mettenberger back to pass, under pressure, steps up, looking downfield, has a receiver in the end zone, a fly goes down. It is caught for a touchdown. It is the first passing touchdown for the Express, and it comes from Zach Mettenberger. So it's third down and 18 for Mettenberger. Looking, firing. Has a receiver wide open. Touchdown Express. Mettenberger looked off his first read and found Shepard all by himself. And the Express aren't backing down to anybody.
Acadiana. All former LSU fans. I'm not even an LSU fan, but I took part in this. We made it happen.
When I say Meddy, you say B. Meddy.
B.
Meddy.
B.
We did it, Raymond.
Yes. We willed it into existence that the former LSU Tiger, Zach Mettenberger, is now the starter for your Memphis Express.
I think I might have found my team, Ray. I've been waiting to see who I'm going to hitch on to.
And Memphis Express watch party is in our future.
It's not even the fact that Zach Mettenberger is now the starting quarterback for your Memphis Express members of the Alliance. I'm still going to get a sound.
I love that name. I love the Alliance.
But it's not even that that is why I'm going to cheer for Memphis now. It is because of the tweet that accompanied that video. That video, that sound you heard was this awesome hype video that
the team made, right?
The Express tweeted out. It's actually, if you go look the Memphis Express Twitter account, it's their pinned tweet right now.
It's their pinned tweet. Now, mind you, once again to recap, Christian Hackenberg.
Yep. You should never touch a football again, right?
That's what had been the starting quarterback. They did not have, I don't think Memphis scored a single touchdown the entire season.
Not through the air.
Not through the air. And he throws two first half picks. They're down 9-0. Mettenberger comes in, throws two touchdowns, almost 150 yards just in the second half. Almost leads him from a come from behind victory against future cruise ship extraordinaire Steve Spurrier's right. Orlando Apollos. And he looked awesome. And the team went ahead and cut a hype video just based on the second half highlights of Meddy B. And now it's their pinned tweet.
But this is the best part of it is the actual caption that goes with the tweet. It's got a quote from Meddy B. It says, "It was all business as usual for me." And that's the end of the quote. And then the team puts in the caption, "This is the Met Show now."
The Met Show.
The Met Show.
Yes.
The M-E-T-T. The Met Show. So the Memphis Express absolutely listening to Rap Game with RP3. Meddy B is the starter. The Met Show is now being a thing they're trying to coin and phrase in Memphis.
I'm down.
So whoever's listening, you're welcome. That's all we're saying. We didn't trademark it. That's on us. You're welcome.
Zach Mettenberger getting the opportunity to lead the Memphis Express to their first victory this coming weekend.
I'll be watching now. Now I have to watch.
This is why I love this league. The backup quarterback comes in, for your winless team. He leads the team to two touchdown drives. They fall short, and they cut a hype video automatically.
Less than 48 hours. Here you go, Matt. It's all you, buddy.
That is amazing.
So I asked you this question during the break before we got into this segment, and I never got really a definitive answer from you because I don't know how to frame this, but Medi B is either the John Cena of LSU football or the John Cena of the Memphis Express. One of the two, because this is the ultimate never give up story. Back to the starting spot, regardless if it's the NFL or not, this is a league that's played in conjuncture, so to speak, with the NFL. It is on national television, and Zach Mettenberger, once again, a starting quarterback. I mean, never give up. Way to go, Medi B.
Here's a guy, and I would agree with that. I think you could say it. I think you could say it for both. I think it applies. The comparison could apply to both.
This whole Memphis Express team, they should just be the Memphis Express pseudo John Cena LSU Tigers. That should really be their team name.
The Met Show.
The Met Show. Hashtag all aboard. That's their team. Hashtag. Hashtag all aboard.
All aboard.
This gets better and better.
I'm telling you, after the end of the season, what they should do, because all these teams are regional, right? And they're all, and the majority of them are in markets that do not have an NFL franchise.
Right.
I would tour the region. Like, you remember,
like a bus tour?
You remember back in the day when the New Orleans Saints did the Saints tour? It was before the draft, after the season, I think before the draft. And they would go to like malls across the state. And I remember one year they came to Alexandria, and it's a little bit of story time, so I'm inserting here. So they came, and this was Jim Haslett.
Oh, God.
As the coach. And my buddy, one of my best friends, Mike Doyle, hated Haslett. So you could go to the mall, and you could do a meet and greet with them, and they had those little like 3x5 glossy black and white photos of them, and they would just sit there and sign, or they'd sign an autographed football and everything, and it was free. I don't even think you had to pay for it.
That's awesome.
It was the Saints tour, and they'd go throughout all the state, Alexandria, Monroe, Shreveport, Baton Rouge,
right,
like Charles, New Orleans, and they do like 5 or 6 dates, and I think they go to Mississippi too, Jackson, and maybe like Gulfport or something like that. So that's what they should do, and I remember that was a great thing. Now, this was pre-Katrina, and this was everything had changed after that, and then they got good, and then they sold out for season tickets, and they didn't really need to do the tour to kind of help drum up support for the team. But I got to meet Charles Grant.
Leroy Glover?
No. Leroy was not there. I got my picture taken.
Norman Hand? I love the D-line and the gymnastics. They were the best.
It was the but I got to meet John Stinchcomb.
Oh, nice.
Right.
He's a large individual.
Yes. I wanted to meet all the large people.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't even care about the DB.
Oh, this was back RP3 Bills days.
I might not have even been that big. I mean, this was that long ago. Charles Grant was still there. Boo Williams.
Boo.
Right. Boo was there. I actually interrupted the local TV station in Alexandria trying to do an interview with Boo Williams because I was waiting in line. You know, you had to wait in line to see all these guys. You shake their hand, and I still, this is how long ago it was, I still had a camera that had film in it when I took the pictures.
I don't know who that is.
Yeah, there you go. So I got my picture taken with Stinchcomb. Definitely Charles Grant. So me and my buddy got our picture taken with Charles Grant, and he put us like in a headlock because he's such a massive human being.
Right.
And I think he broke my collarbone.
Yes.
And
to this day, it doesn't sit right.
It doesn't sit right. It's like an old wrestling injury. It just nags. When it gets cold, it aches. And so Boo Williams, I was like, I got to meet Boo Williams. I was like, Boo's awesome. And he stops, and the TV guy, I'm not going to say who it was, the TV guy decided he wanted to be, like, he was top dog.
Right.
So he just interrupts the line and stops the line. He's like, Boo, I need to do an interview with you on camera. So he starts an interview, and I'm like, oh, hell no.
Not so fast.
So me and my boy, I was like, Boo, I know you're doing the thing with TV, man. But, man, we've been here. We just wanted to see, just wanted to shake your hand, mate, take a picture, man, and get your autograph, man. We love you. And he's like, I'm doing an interview. I said, I know, man, but, you know, we just, you know, the TV people, man, they ain't coming to your game. They ain't cheering for you.
Yeah.
And he's like, my man. And he got up and took a picture with me and my boy and signed autographs and made the TV guy wait.
That's awesome.
And I was like,
see, I live for derailing things like that. So now, C-Ray, you've given me something to aspire to. Well done, sir.
But that's the old, like, I think they called it the old New Orleans Saints caravan is what they would call it. And the college teams kind of do that. LSU does that.
They do.
Northwestern State
Tour
does that.
The Tiger, yeah.
So, and the Cajuns do that. I think they go to Houston. Mm-hmm. So the Memphis Express could do that. I mean, with the roster that they have, and if Mettenberg turns them around, and they got LSU guys aplenty on the team.
Can you imagine if they came to the Capitol? They came to Baton Rouge, the Memphis Express, for something similar to what you're saying?
There would be so much fanfare. We're trying to promote the band. They're in Memphis. Why not go to Jackson, maybe down to Gulfport,
and then hit
Tiger
New
Orleans, Baton Rouge? You know,
there would be some fanfare.
Shreveport, just hit that kind of little bit of that corridor to get people excited about the product.
You get a place like Walk-Ons or a Twin Peaks or something like that in a Buffalo Wild Wings.
Basically, what me and Cody are trying to do is say that we'd like to be employed by the Memphis Express.
What I'm trying to say is I just want them to come to me, basically. So I just left Tennessee. I was in Tennessee. And speaking of, shout out, thoughts to all the people in East Tennessee, apparently. There's a lot of crazy flooding going on in East Tennessee right now. Cajun Navy, I think, is looking to do some stuff to help them out up there, so... You know, shout out and look out for all those guys up there. But, I mean, I just left Tennessee, so I would prefer if the Memphis Express would come to me. So that's kind of what I'm lobbying for.
That's not selfish at all.
Oh, I never said it wasn't. But Zach Mettenberger, I think, it obviously things for the Memphis Express can't get any worse. You would also...
Yes, they are winless.
Right.
The only other team in the Alliance that's winless is...
The Atlanta Legends.
The Atlanta Legends.
Yes, yes. I love the fact... that all Atlanta football is terrible. Just terrible. But I also do enjoy that in this hype video, the thumbnail of the video, it points out quite blatantly that the Alliance teams are rocking the starter jerseys. That's pretty awesome.
That is pretty awesome.
I can't say, I mean, I have a pair of like some starter socks and stuff. I mean, I can't tell you the last time I've seen a starter jersey.
You're too young to remember.
When starter was cool. Yeah, I know.
The starter bomber jacket. Oh,
was it like
man.
It was like a windbreaker type jacket, right?
Well, you had the one that was like the windbreaker, okay, but you also had like the bomber jacket, right?
Oh, the big puffy one. Yeah.
Dude, I had a Chicago Bulls one.
Starter. Starter is a great brand.
I felt like the absolute coolest cat on the face of the planet when I was rocking my Chicago Bulls starter jacket. The only thing that would have been cooler than a Bulls, now that was Jordan era Bulls, okay?
Oh, Lord.
So the only thing cooler than that back in the day?
FUBU.
No.
No?
During that time, if your starter jacket would have been the Charlotte Hornets, because let me tell you, everyone wanted the Charlotte Hornets gear because you had Grandmama, Larry Johnson, you had Alonzo Mourning, you had Muggsy Bogues. That color, that purple,
basically
that
the cast
teal.
Of Space Jam.
Yeah, essentially. But that color scheme, oh, man. Even growing up in Louisiana, like Baton Rouge and New Orleans, you'd see tons.
That teal and purple is
oh,
sick.
That Hornets was just everywhere, man.
I still have a few when they were obviously New Orleans Hornets. I have like the foam finger.
Yeah.
When they were the Hornets. I have a few. I have a Chris Paul jersey from the Hornets. So, I mean, I have a few pieces of it, but yeah, that. But when the Hornets came back to New Orleans the second time, it was less teal and purple and was more like a teal and yellow when they came back. That first go-round and then the Charlotte Hornets, absolutely. That teal and that purple. It was like what the Jacksonville Jaguars are trying to do and not succeeding.
Not succeeding, no.
Which is what the Jacksonville Jaguars are very good at.
Yes, but
not succeeding.
not succeeding. But, yeah, that's what the Memphis Express should do, man. I love the team. You got Meddy B. He's now been named a starter.
And Mike confirmed that the Memphis Express listened to Rap Game with RP3. Confirmed.
That's, well, absolutely, as they should have been the whole time.
Well, they figured it out now, thank goodness.
I mean, let's just be real. That's what they should have been doing. But how can you not love the Alliance? You got Meddy B. hype video for the Memphis Express. You got Trent Richardson staking a claim to be
MVP.
The first MVP. He looked like he was washed up, and oh, by the way, you can go on a cruise ship with the old ball coach.
Don't you forget it.
Oh, man. Gotta love the Alliance.
Spring football, it's a thing.
Memphis Express watch party. We're going to make that happen.
It'll have it'll be
you and me. And
Casa de Raimundo.
It'll be a Casa de Raimundo, yes. But we'll make it happen. Oh, we'll wrap up this edition of the Rap Game with RP3 right here on 103.7 The Game, your home of the LSU Tigers.
Woo!
Welcome back to Rap Game with RP3. I'm your host, Raymond Parsa III, here on 103.7 The Game, your station for the Ric Flair Woo. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios. Before the break, we were talking about the Alliance Spring Football. There's only two teams that are winless. One of them is the Memphis Express, but the promotion of the Medi B, the Met Show, Zach Mettenberger, will make sure that the Memphis Express gets off the schneid.
I believe.
And will no longer be a winless team. But the other winless team is, of course, and we have to have a moment to throw shade, are the Atlanta Legends.
Woo!
I keep
hitting the woo for the Atlanta Legends for multiple reasons.
Woo!
One, because they are winless. That's always fun. We will woo forever and always anytime Atlanta football is winless. And I also woo because yesterday, Raymond, shame on the two of us. Just in this one, I don't even feel bad. Just as much you as me, because we both, you're wrestling fans, both of us. Different generations wrestling fans, though, without a doubt.
That's right, but we're trying to bridge the gap.
We are. We're working on that.
Yes, yes.
Me to the history of it, and you catching you up to the modernization of it. But nonetheless, yesterday was the Nature Boy himself, Ric Flair's birthday, and we missed it. Shame on us. He was turning 70 years old yesterday, so that was something we should have noted. 70 years
Flair
old, the Nature
70?
Boy. Still looking good. He was, it's been advertised for like 2 weeks that they were going to do a big birthday celebration on Monday Night Raw for Ric Flair. Was in Atlanta last night, and all kind of legends were there from Flair's career. Steamboat showed up and came out.
Of course.
The man they call Sting showed up. He came out. HBK was there. Triple H was there, of course.
Do you know that my wife actually touched Sting?
That's impressive. Not
back in the day.
Keep that. Yeah, well done.
Yes, yes. She actually physically got to touch the Sting.
But the hype was in full force last night. And then, of course, the man of the hour himself, Ric Flair, his music hits, and we're waiting.
Sequence. He's wearing the sequence.
Well, here's the thing, Raymond.
What?
He never made it to the entrance ramp. The camera cuts to the back, and you're trying to figure out what's going on, and you can't quite figure out like who's messing with who, and Ric Flair, and all you know, you hear this.
Hey, Hunter. Do I have your attention now?
Are you telling... Time out.
You know it, Raymond.
Are we finally getting the Batista Triple H match at WrestleMania?
We are getting the Batista Triple H match at WrestleMania. That is what it seems.
I will watch WrestleMania again if I get the Dave Batista Triple H match.
That's the only line we got from Batista. Batista is, you maybe, no, hold on. That's such a sick entrance theme. But the Drax from the Avengers, the Guardians of the Galaxy, if you don't know who Dave Batista is, he plays Drax, so now you know.
He was a bad to the bone wrestler.
Yes.
For quite a long time.
Was part of Evolution with Ric Flair and Triple H and Randy Orton and all that. So it was kind of odd to not see Batista be one of the guys come out to, you know, say happy birthday, well wishes to Ric Flair. But then when the camera cuts to the back, Batista has pummeled the Nature Boy, left him unconscious. He's dragging him out of his dressing room, and he grabs the camera, and that's the line you hear there from Batista again.
Hey, Hunter. Do I have your attention now?
Oh.
So sick. Do I have your attention now?
He beat up Ric Flair on his birthday
he
to
did.
Get the place's attention.
But see, a little peek behind the curtain, which is really smart from WWE's standpoint, because social media is so prevalent now that a lot of things get leaked. A lot of things come out and you know about them ahead of time. One, I didn't know about this Batista thing ahead of time, so good job for WWE keeping that under wraps.
Good up to Triple H, because he runs a well-oiled machine.
But here's the other, the storyline has been that Triple H and WWE, Vince McMahon, all those, they're not too interested right now in bringing Batista in. That had been the story on social media. It's because he's so busy with the Avengers and with his movies and stuff that they weren't, like, Batista wasn't really on the radar. They wasn't going to bring him in or anything. And so to have Batista come in and as if he's, you know, invading Raw, so to speak, beats up Ric Flair, and then, do I have your attention now? It's for those social media fans like me that see a lot of these things early. That's a really good line. Oh, Oh, so wow. It makes it seem
so
even
you're telling
more
me right genius. Now, WrestleMania, this is what we have lined up. We
I mean, nothing confirmed. But
nothing confirmed. We anticipate a Ronda Rousey.
Well, that's confirmed. Ronda Rousey versus Charlotte Flair. That's confirmed. Becky Lynch will some way find her way back.
Somehow
in that match.
Becky Lynch will be in that match. Correct. We also know it's going to be Brock Lesnar versus Seth Rollins.
That's going to be a hell of a match.
For the title.
Right.
Right. And I told this, you were gone this week. After seeing the house show, or seeing the Monday Night Raw here at the Cajun Dome,
right,
Seth Rollins is going to win that belt.
Oh, yeah. He needs to.
Yeah, you see that coming from a mile away. But now you're telling me that we can get Batista and Triple H as well?
Correct. Along with
and
whoever,
possibly
Daniel Bryan.
And possibly Roman Reigns.
Roman Reigns came back. There's not enough time to talk about Raw. You have to listen to the 20 by 20 podcast this week. Roman Reigns is in remission. He's back. The big dog reclaiming his yard. Raymond, I got to let you wrap the show up.
It was a terrific show. Thanks to Sheldon Mickles and Les East for coming on. We'll be back on tomorrow. We'll have our friend Ron Higgins from Tiger Details breaking down some LSU baseball for us. And we'll recap the LSU men's basketball game as well. Jim Rome is next. Tiger Ag tonight, 6 to 7:30. 7:30 pregame show for Hoops. 8 o'clock tip right here on 103.7 The Game, your home of the LSU Tigers.